I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. Next hour, it's Thursday, we'll have our Freedom and Prosperity Hour once again with Americans Prosperity. Stone Clanton's coming in. We hadn't seen each other in a little while. They've been gone, then I was gone, then they were gone again, and now we're back together. So we'll take a look at that. I saw an article today about the fact that for a lot of states to survive, ultimately they're going to have to come up with what they termed parallel economies. And I believe that's the case. The federal government is lost. It's insolvent. It's completely insolvent. We're pretending to not notice that, but it is. And so Americans for Prosperity, that's one of these groups out there trying to create some economic freedom here in the state of Mississippi, which I believe we are going to desperately need in probably the not-too-distant future. So anyway, we'll take a look at what Americans for Prosperity are up to today and probably do a little bit of election talking with them, too. I don't know how to do today's show. And I'll tell you why. This first hour, I've just got a laundry list of good news here. You know, that's not my MO. I can be accused of being a doom and gloomer guy. But it's kind of interesting. Yesterday, I started the show out by reporting good news. And the good news that we talked about yesterday was that only 3% of our toddlers' parents have agreed to experiment on them with these COVID shots. And that is in the face of pediatricians pushing these shots, the mainstream media pushing these shots, all of the health authorities, the medical establishment, social media, peer pressure. And only 3% of parents of kids in that 6-month to 4-year-old range, only 3% have subjected their parents to this experiment. The numbers get a little more concerning when you go from 5 to 11 or from 12 to 17, I believe. Ends up being about a third of parents, but you know, we'll take the good news where we can find it, and we find that only 3% of our toddlers are being experimented on. I also talked yesterday about the fact that a New York judge tossed out the vaccine requirements for employees of the state of New York, ordered them to be rehired with back pay. So some of this is a return to sanity, and I've got more, a lot more today. Check this out. This is not the United States, but I still think this is an important story and how the pendulum may be finally swinging. In what may be a watershed moment in Western society's approach to purportedly transgendered children, the UK's National Health Service is now warning that such feelings, quote, may be a transient phase, particularly for pre-pubertal children. Now, I know a lot of us would probably say, duh, but as bad as we have lost control over the medical establishment around the world over the last couple of years, whether it was COVID or these transgender puberty blocking experiments, again, on our children, for the UK's National Health Service to come out and admit and say it may be a transient phase, particularly for pre-pubertal children, is pretty big news. National Health Service points to, quote, scarce and inconclusive evidence to support clinical decision-making and a lack of evidence to support families in making informed decisions about interventions that may have lifelong consequences. NHS says healthcare providers therefore shouldn't hastily push children into changing their names, pronouns, or bodies and should consider mental health issues that are frequently present among this universe of children. So this is extremely good news. Now, the U.S. medical establishment may be the worst on planet Earth, because if they see a dollar to be made, they will push something to the limit. We are actually, you know, what's interesting, many countries around the world, and I don't think I've done an adequate job of reporting on it, because I think it would be important for people to know, countries around the world are basically banning the COVID shots, particularly for children, anybody under the age of 18. I think Denmark might have been the first one to do that. And then they pretty much said they're not going to be available to anybody under 50. It might be Poland that has stopped the entire program. Other countries are making moves on this. As I say, the pendulum is swinging. But the UK medical establishment has gone completely insane over the last, I'd say, maybe 5 years, but particularly the last couple of years. But this is a good sign. A Western government has made this change. Now, I want people to remember, people who listen to this, if you've got children, if you've got grandchildren, nieces and nephews that you love, and you know they're growing up in troubling times when it comes to this gender confusion, and you'll only hear this on this show. It is not talked about pretty much anywhere else, but I believe one of the drivers of this gender confusion in our kids is the food and the environment we are raising them in. The social push towards this weirdness is certainly at play, but we have barraged our children with soy and a bunch of other estrogen mimickers that are wreaking havoc on their hormones and their sexual development. It is not a lie to say there are chemicals out there that are turning the frogs gay. As much as Alex Jones was derided for that, the science around atrazine and the experiments, the things that were seen in the frog population that turned male frogs into females, where they could actually mate, is actually sound science. So if you want to give your child the best chance to develop normally, sexually, mentally, you need to be paying attention to what you're giving them, because I'm telling you, a lot of these chemicals are playing with their physical bodies as well as their mental states. So we've got a pendulum swinging. Shots aren't being taken, even for these boosters, among adults. Many of the adults who were real adherents, I mean, we saw a period of time where people were going out and getting tattoos, Pfizer tattoos. But the boosters are not being taken. There's really no appetite for any of these shots, despite Joe Biden and his best efforts. You look at the defund the police stuff, has all but completely disappeared. And in many cases has been completely reversed, where you have the people who had called for it actually coming out and saying, I never said that. Now, luckily, the internet exists, so people put together supercuts of the Democratic Party saying they should defund the police. But they're actually disavowing that they ever even said it, trying to pretend they didn't even say it. And it's interesting, I saw a statistic the other day that minority women, that's the golden, the holy grail of what is the oppressed society on the left. Minority women are the fastest growing segment of new gun buyers right now. We've had a period just a couple days ago where this Fetterman character, this looks like some kind of a character from a child troll horror story, exposed himself of not being capable of even carrying on a conversation. Of course, this does just leave us with Dr. Oz, but baby steps, I guess. We've seen in the past year comedians, including even many fairly leftist comedians, Bill Maher, standing up to the cancel culture. CNN is firing all of its, air quotes here in the studio, talent. These guys are dropping like flies at CNN. And the Democrats are on the verge of losing a big time in the elections. I am kicking myself that I'd never thought, I've said many times, I'm always suspicious of the media telling you that we've got dead heats here and there and that everything is very close and it looks like the party we didn't think was going to win is going to win. I think it's all about getting advertising spending. If they just came out originally and just said, well, look, this is what's going to happen. The red wave's going to happen. I mean, you're talking about a reduction of at least 50% in advertising spending. The media has a vested interest in constantly making everything really close so that candidates spend advertising dollars. But predict it. It just never made sense to me that there would not be a red wave. I don't know of a time where the vast majority of Americans have probably felt so crummy about the way things are going between inflation. Well, mostly inflation. Most people see a needless war going on in Ukraine and our involvement in it. I mean, people are not happy with the way things are going right now. And I couldn't imagine a way that the Democrats could maintain their control over our Congress in that kind of an atmosphere, on top of the fact that most presidents lose majorities in the midterms. It never made sense to me, but I should have put my money where my mouth was. Predict It, which is the betting site on things like this, has now got Republicans. If you want to earn a dollar, you can bet 69 cents. You bet 69 cents and you get a dollar. If the Republicans win, it's 34 cents for the Democrats. This is the Senate. The Senate, we were told, just is out of reach of the Republicans. Oh, they may take the House, but the Senate is a no-go. Now, Predict It has got 69% chance for the Republicans and only 34% chance for the Democrats. Essentially, that's what these betting odds are saying. So these things are definitely trending in a different direction. Censorship, again, as I said, I'm having a little trouble. I'm going through my notes here. Everything is really pretty much good news that I'm going through here. Censorship's on the run. You know, the left has been pushing this censorship very bizarrely, much like they're now pushing for war. What happened to the good parts of the left? They really used to be very good on censorship. I know we don't want to ever admit that Democrats and liberals were better on something than the right, but when it comes to foreign policy and civil rights, the left has been many times even better than the right. Real liberals have been pushing back against this censorship, but the insanity that gripped the Democratic Party has been pushing for it. Facebook right now is being crushed financially. I mean crushed. I think their stock dropped 20% yesterday. And this is after a pretty steady fall for a while. And this is one of my favorite things here. You want to talk about some good news so far? Knock on wood. The metaverse is a complete flop. I was talking to my son yesterday. He said that the average user count was around 30 people on the metaverse. Understand, they spent $1.2 billion on this thing. I wanted to fact check my son, make sure I didn't come on air and erroneously report something. Metaverse Project Decentraland, a sandbox environment that allows users to buy and sell virtual real estate. That is so insane. Isn't exactly teeming with people. Despite billions of dollars in valuations, companies betting on a metaverse future simply haven't made such headway. In fact, according to data aggregator Dapp Radar, the Ethereum-based world Decentraland only had 38 quote, active users, unquote, over a period of 24 hours. A confoundingly low number, especially considering the company had a market cap of a whopping $1.2 billion. I got to tell you, those 38 people got to be spending a whole lot of money for that operation to be worth over $1 billion. Decentraland, this is a metaverse, pushed back, though, saying that active users are defined as unique blockchain wallet addresses that interact with its system. As CoinDesk explains, that means users who simply log in to chat or interact with others aren't being counted. This was their fight back. Again, this thing is supposedly worth $1.2 billion. I think it's about what they've spent trying to grow this thing that I see as a real danger. I've been very concerned that they would make our lives so miserable out in the real world that people would seek this refuge and we would be strapping millions of people into VR suits trying to escape scary reality that was created by these people in the first place and trying to find refuge in this online community. But it does not appear to be happening. Decentraland's creative director, Sam Hamilton, here's what he said. He said, Dapp Radar doesn't track our users, only people interacting with our contracts. He added that the platform averages around 8,000 users on an average day. Again, I don't care if it's 38 or it's 8,000. You've spent billions and billions and billions of dollars on this ridiculous exercise of trying to suck people into the Matrix. Even if you've got 8,000 users, that is a pretty paltry and pathetic attendance in the new metaverse. So I'm telling you, the good news, the hits keep on coming. And we're going to get to another thing, another fight out against censorship. Supposedly tomorrow, Elon Musk will close his deal on Twitter. We're going to talk about that in just a second as well. Stick around. So I am happy to see anything that shows the authoritarian left on the run, whether it is the National Health Service in England saying, hey, let's hold up on this sexual gender reassignment for our kids. It may just be a phase. Anything that moves this stuff backwards is good for me. Now, I spent time on Tuesday, on Tech Tuesday, telling you, I've got my eye on Elon Musk. Now, a lot of people have turned into real fans of this guy, and that's great. I find him interesting. He's innovative, but I also know I don't know you become the richest man in the world, at least reportedly. There's a lot of people who say the Saudis or Rockefellers or, you know, people that behind this we don't talk about really, but Elon Musk is an American oligarch, and you have to play the game. I know we're all looking for some really rich guy to be the guy that is the golden-hearted oligarch, but I'm just suspicious. I've been burned before. I'll just put it that way. But I will say I take a great deal of pleasure in watching this Twitter takeover. And supposedly, I don't know it's done until it's done with the saga, the soap opera that has been the Musk takeover of Twitter. But apparently this deal is supposed to close tomorrow. And yesterday, apparently, Elon Musk sashayed himself right into Twitter headquarters in San Francisco. And the staff, pins and needles. These people who have sat in their Silicon Valley ivory towers, crushing any dissent to the COVID regime, any calling out of the hypocrisy around Ukraine, their censorship fingers ready at the button constantly. And they've lived in this little tower, and it's gotten kind of uncomfortable for them. And I got to tell you, I love that. Their chief marketing officer, Leslie Berlin, said, quote, Elon is in the San Francisco office this week, meeting with folks, walking the halls, and continuing to dive in on the important work you all do. You know, you can kind of feel this vibe when this guy may come in and really upset the apple cart. This is a bunch of very fragile kids running this show, I believe, have been running this show. And this is kind of their mom who they've been able to kind of come to for comfort in their safe space there. It's okay. He's walking the halls. She said, continue to say, for everyone else, this is just the beginning of many meetings and conversations with Elon, and you'll all hear directly from him on Friday. So it's kind of one of these things where it's just... yeah, he's here. Everybody be okay. And the meltdowns that are going on there are going public as well. Some of the employees, Twitter employees, have penned an open letter to soon-to-be boss Elon Musk and the board of directors begging to keep their jobs after the Washington Post reported that Musk is planning to get rid of nearly 75% of the company's 7,500 workers, whittling Twitter down to a skeleton staff of just over 2,000. If you don't have to censor tens of millions of posts a day, you probably don't need that many people. This letter from the employees say Elon Musk's plan to lay off 75% of Twitter workers will hurt Twitter's ability to serve the public conversation. A threat of this magnitude is reckless, undermines our users' and customers' trust in our platform, and is a transparent act of worker intimidation. This is the tone with which I read this letter. So they are, I think they're wigging out a little bit in San Francisco right now. This could be incredibly interesting to see. The letter then suggests that the full staff is, quote, helping to uplift independent journalism in Ukraine and Iran, as well as powering social movements around the world. So they've got quite a high opinion of themselves there at Twitter. They also demand dignity. They said, we demand transparent, prompt, and thoughtful communication around our working conditions. We demand to be treated with dignity and to not be treated as mere pawns in a game played by billionaires. So you got to love these kids that have been raised. Now, they've been raised this way, I guess. As I said, this social justice warrior generation didn't drop out of the sky and come from another planet. American parents raised these people, but I love the demands. I should play the Noodle Boy clip. Maybe I'll come back with it. Yeah, I think I will. It's just one of my favorites. Any opportunity I have to play the guy from Noodles Restaurant, I'm going to use it. But they're making demands of Elon Musk. That might not be your best tact. I would imagine a few people actually signed this thing. They're just going to float it out there to let the world know of the persecution of some of these poor Twitter employees. So Xu is a little bit on the other foot. As I say, I do not view Elon Musk as the savior. He has said, he's got a letter out where he's talking to advertisers. He said the reason that he bought Twitter was to serve humanity. And I got to tell you, I'm a little always suspicious of these kinds of claims. Now, he may see some profit motive in that. He also said, quote, Twitter obviously cannot become a free-for-all hellscape where anything can be said with no consequences. Now, I can understand that to a degree. Anybody who runs any site certainly think there are things you don't want to see, but he's pledged to the advertisers to make this thing very advertiser-friendly, really to target ads, and he talks about them being his content. I mean, I don't have any doubt the guy's a genius. We'll see. Twitter itself, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, I do hate seeing what's happened in the world of social media, which is the left and the right retreat to their own echo chambers and just pump each other up. Now it's almost like maybe the walls are going to open up and the fighting will go straight on to Twitter, which I think will be very damaging. I think it's unhealthy. Unhealthy to just scream at other people. You don't know their story. You don't know where they're coming from. You don't know anything about them, yet you judge them and deride them and scream at them online. I don't think that's really like a healthy way to even go through life mentally, just for yourself. Not to mention what it does to society, but I have found that hate is very corrosive to the person who involves themselves in it. We don't care often what other people say about us, but the hate that we have for others, I think, is actually damaging to ourselves. I sometimes had to learn that the hard way. But anyway, we'll see exactly what goes on. But I'm having as much fun as anybody else thinking about the Twitter employees' reaction to the takeover of Twitter by Elon Musk. So we'll see how it turns out. It's going to be fun to watch. When I come back, I'm telling you, I'm doing a positive show today. There was even some positive economic news. Holy cow! What is happening? I'll be right back. All right. Welcome back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're doing just about an hour of good news. Well, I've got a couple of things here. I mean, we're at the cusp, possibly, of World War III because we have insane people in charge of U.S. foreign policy, as we have for decades. I mean, we still face some issues, but it's good to take some victories. Democrats are looking like they're going to take a shellacking, which is just common sense. I just never imagined it could go any other way with the way things are going right now. We got minority women buying guns. We got the health authorities in the U.K., pausing and cautioning against transgenderism with our children. We got employees at Twitter and CNN squirming in their seats, fearing for their jobs, and the metaverse is flopping. This is all good news. You know, there's a lot of good arguments to be made that globalism is being destroyed as well. all of these institutions driving that are losing credibility at what I believe to be a record pace. Now, I've been pushing against our health agencies here since the day I came on air, but it took COVID for them to truly expose themselves and for most people to see that they are not serving our interests. But these institutions, and I believe the Federal Reserve will certainly have its credibility questions maybe seriously as people become educated in it when we go through the financial crisis, and maybe we can lay blame where it belongs. But anyway, more good news on the economic front. We got third quarter GDP came in positive at 2.6% growth. Now, the annoying thing about this is going to be watching Joe Biden and Democrats try to take a victory lap around this one and tell you the recession is over. We're out. This is not true. I caution you. Don't celebrate that too much. But you've got to ignore an awful lot about this economy and things that are going on around the world that I point out almost on a daily basis to believe that the economy is humming on all cylinders. But we do get a 2.6% growth number in GDP spending. Now, I will give credit where credit is due. Democrats are largely responsible for much of this positive number in GDP. I hate to tell you people on the right, they may have goosed GDP themselves because government spending is reflected in GDP. Now, this is, I believe, a crime because politicians know this, and it creates a very perverse incentive to spend a ton of money and then try to take credit for the increased economic activity. You've got to wonder how much of GDP was affected by draining all of our weapons supplies and shipping them over to Ukraine and then reordering new weapons from the defense contractors to restock the shelves. I would imagine that is not a small portion of what's been going on as well. But we have got a positive GDP number, which I will tell you, a month or so ago, I would not have believed. There's a lot of things that go into that. Apparently, a lot of export activity. But anyway, we'll take it. I'd still say look out below. I saw an interesting interview yesterday about an Airbnb, they're calling it an Airbnb bust. And it was talking about Airbnb, which I hadn't really thought about when it comes to real estate stuff. I'll recap it to you because I just found it fairly fascinating. Apparently, about 50% of the properties that are listed on Airbnb right now for these short-term rentals, about 50% of them have been bought in just the past 2 years during this latest housing mania. And this is very similar. I don't get out enough. I've talked to some people. If you've bought a condo down in Florida, Airbnb is great to generate some income from it while you're not using it, that kind of thing. But apparently, what's been happening is that very similar to the house flipping of the 2004, 5, 6, 7. Where you started having people go from town to town running seminars, and if you buy their $2,400 program, they'll show you how to get rich off of Airbnb. So it was kind of the same vibe going on around Airbnb, where some people were taking on 10, 12 properties strictly for Airbnb. And apparently recently a tweet got sent out from an Airbnb owner's board, where one of the people said, is anybody else noticing I'm having no rentals whatsoever? Like, there's no activity on my Airbnb. And this was just put out into a board, you know, kind of like a chat forum for Airbnb owners. And then apparently several of the other owners go, yeah, we've noticed this. My bookings are down 70, 80, 90% as well. Well, this was explained in the fact that, number one, because so many properties have been bought for use just exclusively with Airbnb. These aren't second properties you rent when you're not using them, but people proactively went out and bought properties for the express purpose of offering them up to get an income from these properties. So there was an oversupply of these things. At the same time, the stimmies were running out. People had kind of already gone out and done their, we got to get out of this house. We've been locked down for 2 years. We're going to go do a little bit of traveling. That started to end. And then inflation hit and people cannot take as many vacations. So these people who have gone out and gotten into this Airbnb boom, I guess, over the last couple of years that I wasn't really paying attention to, are finding themselves suddenly with several properties that are not cash flowing at all. There's also was talk in this presentation, well, it's just this interview, that Airbnb started this very interesting concept. I like this connection of people. As a libertarian, I love the idea of just finding somebody who voluntarily wants to rent your house, and you make some income renting your house out. You fill a need. All of that stuff is great. But Airbnb started out as a way to compete with hotels. And number one, you've got this space, this house that's not being used. Someone can actually go and enjoy the comfort of a home, and it was cheaper than a hotel. But in the past few years, and I have noticed this as I've done some traveling, Airbnb actually ended up, in many cases, becoming more expensive than hotels. Hotels were very worried, and they got hurt by Airbnb. There's no doubt about that. But you'll see these houses, and if there's nothing special about it, the location doesn't even have to be great. People are asking large amounts. The cleaning fees on these things, when I was in Dallas, there was a possibility I was going to be in Dallas for months. And so I started looking, instead of throwing my money away at a hotel, I started looking at some Airbnbs to see if there was something that I could rent for a month at a time and save some money. But the vast majority of them were more expensive than a hotel for 30 days. And especially when you added on all of the fees for a month were something like $400, $500. That was the fee. That wasn't the rent for the Airbnb. So anyway, they've kind of flip-flopped with hotels and made themselves more expensive. So now people are having these negative cash flows, and they took on a bunch of debt to buy these houses. And now they're going to possibly need to dump them. This is at the same time where big investors like the Zillows and what's the other place called, Open Door, I believe it was, has been out doing these wholesale buys of residential properties. They now have backed up as well. Housing market's not as hot. And many of them have made announcements that they're going to be cutting anywhere from 50 to 90% of their home purchases. And also these big companies that have been buying a bunch of residential real estate, now they're having to pay some interest on the money they borrowed. They've been using free money for quite a while to go out and buy up the American dream. Now they're having to pay a little bit of interest on it. It makes the calculation a little different. They've got to factor in a little bit of interest expense, and many of them have pulled back as well. There was also talk in this, so this is all plays into kind of the real estate picture. How many Airbnb people are now seeing negative cash flow from these houses and they need to dump them? But there was also, they were talking about the fact that the one interesting thing about real estate, and I've been talking about the decline that is going to be inevitable if interest rates continue their upward trajectory. We just now have crossed, I think nationally the average is over 7%, more than double what it was at the very beginning of this year. I've talked a lot about real estate, but the interesting thing that was brought up in this interview as well is the comp situation. And I've bought and sold houses, and I remember getting a lot of pressure from neighbors. You know, when you're trying to sell a house, I told you the other day, I had a house that had five closings fall through. We finally closed on it on the sixth one. It was always financing this, or it was a VA loan that was taking too long, and it was just a comedy of errors that led to all these closings. Well, we had already moved out, we're paying another mortgage, and I was ready to get rid of this house. I was, to be honest with you, it was during the summer months. I was sick of going over there every Saturday and toting my lawnmower over there to cut the grass on this house that we were not using anymore while I paid two mortgages. So I was ready to dump it. And I remember the pressure from the neighbors. Don't sell this thing, you know, for less than you've got it listed for. Because as soon as one home buyer in a neighborhood, in any area, cracks and says, I just want out, I'm just taking whatever is offered, as soon as they do that, they are now the comp for the entire neighborhood. It doesn't matter their motivation for selling. It doesn't matter if they had 100% equity in the house, so they just wanted cash back. They didn't really care. They weren't going to be underwater. They didn't have to hold firm to a price, so they went ahead and marked it down. Well, as soon as somebody sells that house that they had listed for $125 a square foot, but they sell it for $110, After that, all of the comps in that neighborhood are suddenly at $110 a square foot. And I remember there being pressure from the neighbors who were saying, well, hang in there. Someone will buy it. It's a great house. Don't come down too much, because they did not want their own property values to go down. But you're going to see. I mean, and particularly if we head into a recession where people lose their jobs. Now, I know the Biden administration is going to try to take a victory lap over this positive GDP print and tell you, oh, there's no recession. But that's absolutely patently absurd. Worse is yet to come. I almost got through almost a whole hour of just good news. But I'm telling you, there's going to be troubles to come. We're not out of the woods. And if there is a recession and people lose their jobs, some people may be forced to sell their homes at whatever they can get for them. And there may be some more jingle mail. Do you remember jingle mail from the 2008 crisis? Jingle mail was essentially where people just they put their keys in an envelope and sent them back to the bank. Here you go. You can have it. And you start having any more jingle mail, maybe some of these Airbnb owners are just going to say, I can't float this property with nobody coming in and renting it. So we'll see. Now, there was also, I'll finish this one on some good news. Used car prices are way down. If you're looking for a car, you're looking for a used car. I have been looking for a used Jeep Grand Cherokee. I like those. It's just, I've had three of them, I think, in my life. Always enjoyed them. And so this is kind of the SUV I've been looking for about 18 months, maybe even 2 years now. And I was looking at one today, so I get some email alerts. I swear I've tried to unsubscribe to these things. I don't think the unsubscribe button on my computer works. I have been furiously unsubscribing to emails, and I can't keep up with who I've unsubscribed to, but my email volume does not seem to be going down. I think they're not paying attention to me. Anyway, I'm still getting these alerts on these Grand Cherokees. There was a recent car with only 41,000 miles on it, and the pricing history on it was started at $32,000. It's listed today for $24,000. It's a 25% reduction in the price of this thing. It's actually a pretty good deal. I might give a call on it, but it is very interesting. So we're seeing definitely some deflation in asset prices, homes, cars, some of these big things. Don't count on that bleeding into consumer prices. Consumer prices appear to be elevated and probably going to continue to go higher. But when it comes to some of these assets, these things are coming way down. That's some pretty shocking stuff. I noticed the trend over about a year's period. I was getting these alerts on these cars, and every alert, the price was higher and higher and higher and higher. And I was realizing, holy crap, why didn't I buy a year ago? Well, now they are coming right back down. So if you're in the market for a used car, more good news for you there. Be right back. Afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. All right, only got a couple of minutes left in this hour, and we'll come back with Stone Clanton from Americans for Prosperity. I want to remind everybody, tomorrow is the day. Stonington Farm will be delivering small orders of their great grass-fed, Mississippi-born, raised, and processed beef. This is no antibiotics, no hormones, prices equal to or better than the stores. So you're getting a better nutritional product at a better price and from a local farmer here. I just love this. So Katie Stonington will be up here in Jackson tomorrow making deliveries. I already have a plan to meet her in Northeast Jackson around 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So this is an opportunity where you don't have to order a half cow to get free delivery. Now, I do not know. This is a small family farm, and they pack up this meat. I don't know if you can still get an order in or not, but it sounds like they're going to be making some regular deliveries up here. So if you don't get in on this one, then you can call down to Stonington Farm, find out when they're going to be back in the Jackson area again, making some of these deliveries. Like, she's just setting up with people who bought beef. This reminds me of the 1920s. You know, you actually meet your farmer with a product. You know where it came from. You know it's not adulterated with a bunch of garbage. It's cows eating the way they're supposed to. It's good nutritional product, and you've got access to a local farm. I am just, you can tell. I do some pretty enthusiastic testimonies for these people, And I'm just thrilled we're opening the Jackson Market for them. If there's a way that I can get people to do business with a local Mississippi company doing something exactly the right way, and you're going to get healthier doing it, this is a no-brainer for me. This is, you know, some advertisers fit right into my my wheelhouse, and this is it, from health to commerce to doing business with local people, and they're just fantastic people. So check them out at stoningtonfarm.com. Stoningtonfarm.com. That's S-T-O-N-N-I-N-G-T-O-N farm.com. And you can see everything they offer, and then there's going to be a phone number. There's no card on there. They want to talk to you. They want to introduce themselves and hear from you, find out what you want. They'll make recommendations on what you can get. And for right now, if you want a delivery tomorrow, they may have to tell you what they have available. They may have a ton of stuff. They may be running short on some things. I have no idea, but just check them out. And if you can't get in on this delivery, then as I say, I think they're going to be making regular trips up here as we open the Jackson Market for them. So it's stoningtonfarm.com, grass-fed beef the way nature intended. Good, healthy product, great price. Check them out. We'll be right back.
Right into this world, all alone, God takes your soul.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. It's Thursday. Finally, we're back to doing our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with Americans for Prosperity. And today we have Stone Clanton in with us. So, Stone, thanks for coming in.
I appreciate it.
You are our grassroots person for the state, right?
Yep, grassroots engagement director for the central region of the state. I pretty much cover from Vicksburg all the way over to Meridian.
The belt.
The belt.
Right across the state there.
Yep.
Yeah. It turns out Meridian's kind of a... They got a good freedom bent over there, don't they?
They do. They got a great liberty wing of conservatives over there.
Yeah.
Got a good little group going on over there. We hadn't done a lot of work in the past, which we did. Kate, our deputy state director, when he was a GED, started years ago, and then he kind of shifted up to North Mississippi where some stuff was going on. So I'm glad to be that we're back over there doing that kind of stuff and building that community up over there.
Yeah. I mean, not to be insulting, but... I don't know. I knew some very unimpressive people from Meridian back in my college days, and just got a real. It just did not feel like much. Then I spent some time over there with actually some political campaigns, and went through downtown Meridian and did some other stuff. It was really kind of a neat town.
Yeah,
I enjoyed my time.
Yeah, it's
over
coming
there.
Back up in the past. I'd say really the past 5 years. It started about 10 years ago. They rejuvenization of their downtown area.
Yeah.
And and honestly, most of the people that are doing that stuff are all liberty minded.
Yeah.
It just happens to be all liberty minded people.
Yeah, well, that's good for them. That will be the key to success. That's what we need to spread across the state of Mississippi. I saw a headline. I was about to say I read an article, but I don't want to lie. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I saw it right before I came on air, and it was just something saying for states to survive, they're going to need to build parallel economies. I think there's something to that. I think it's why the work that y'all are doing is important. And we've talked about this sometimes before. I'm not sure with you or Kate or Starla, but, you know, the federal government's insolvent at this point. I mean, we're not recognizing it, but it's going to have big headwinds going forward. And states are going to be, I think, a little bit more on their own. I don't know if the federal bucks from D.C. are going to dry up from Mississippi anytime soon. They can always print more. But it is. I think it's more important now than any time in my lifetime for states to carve out their own niche and to really be proactive. And their
own economy.
Yes, their own economy.
Mm-hmm.
And Mississippi, just the lack of creativity is always depressing. We get some, you know, we'll get a Continental Tire and a Nissan come into the state. Those are good things.
But no innovation.
Yes. It's just, it's like we wait 10 years, we do a ribbon cutting, they start working on the next thing that'll happen in 10 years to provide 6,000 jobs. Well, that's great, but, you know,
they're not the high paying jobs that are going to Texas and Florida and Georgia and Tennessee right now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All around us. Yeah. The South is not off limits to big time investment and big, economic moves. And you're right. We're seeing, Texas, Florida, and you mentioned Tennessee. Good Lord. Nashville is unrecognizable from 10 years ago from the amount of people that it's brought in. And Mississippi's just got to step up to the plate and start. doing something interesting here.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, or going on a month ago, me and our northern GED, I don't know if you haven't met him yet. His name's Nathan Moore. He's a new guy we got up in North Mississippi.
Yeah.
So he's going to be doing some work up there. He lives in Oxford, which is, he says, is behind enemy lines because he's a state guy. But his wife went to Ole Miss. She used to work for the university. So he's up there doing some work. And he and I were up in Philadelphia working with Americans for Prosperity Action. We went outside and we're sitting around a fire with these guys that were staying at the same hotel as us. We were just chit-chat, making small talk. And they were from California. Two of them were from California. One of them was from Colorado. And they were there working with a competitor to Tesla. I can't remember the name of the electric car company's name, but it was very interesting what they were talking about. And they were like, yeah, he said, we just keep fighting all these bills and stuff that are trying to prevent direct manufacturers from selling cars. And I was like, hey, you know what? We beat a bill that. If Tesla come in, I said, we would love to have y'all come in to Mississippi.
Was it Nikola?
No, I can't.
Good. Nikola's got some problems these days.
I don't know. I can't. If you were to say the name, I would remember it. But we were just like, yeah, come on in. So that's kind of jobs we want to see. We want to be the next.
Yeah.
You know, Tennessee, Florida, Georgia, and Texas. We want those jobs to come in, and it's going to start out. And I know you've heard us talk about the agricultural sandbox, that we're working on. Which, if those of y'all don't know, a regulatory sandbox is essentially what it sounds like as far as playing in the sandbox. We allow these innovators to come in and operate without regulatory laws that haven't been written yet under supervision of a board that then later the legislature or a regulatory board can make those proper regulations if necessary. Of course, we don't want regulations in the first place. But, I mean, you know, there's the technology changes literally every year. So there's no way that a regulatory board or the legislature can keep up with technology. So we want to open up that market, especially to something that's so crucial to Mississippi, which is agriculture. And that's just one example of how we want to see Mississippi bring in more innovative things and higher paying jobs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we've got a lot of advantages. We've got an inexpensive workforce here. I mean, you know.
Well, the cost of living itself is cheaper here, too.
That's what I mean. So there's advantages. We're not off the beaten path. We're pretty much in the center of the country, access to the rest of the country. We certainly got all the land we need. We've got challenges in education. You know, I mean, there's pieces of the puzzle that need to be put in place to actually attract these things. And one is our education system is pretty rough in many parts of the state. Jackson's not running big billboards for attracting new business within.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to do that when you don't have water and your water rate is like 7 out of 7.
They should use us as some kind of a desalinization hub, or you know what I mean? Maybe some new water technology.
Well,
Jackson as an example.
I mean, it's so many issues with that, and that reminded me. I was this past Friday night. I went to spend some time with my alma mater's fraternity that over at MC, and we just had a little kind of a game night. Invited everybody from alumni to whatever, and I went to hang out with one of the guys who lives off campus at his apartment, which is right across the Clinton line into Jackson. I'm talking a few feet.
Right.
And I went in there and I completely forgot about the garbage situation. And I rode in there and it literally looked like Mount Everest of garbage. And I was like, I completely forgot about that. And I saw him last night. I went to the movies with the guy, with two of them that live in the apartment. I was like, hey, do y'all ever get y'all's garbage situation? I was at a breakfast the other day with City Councilman Ashby Foote over there, and he was saying, and I heard him mention that yesterday was the first day they picked up garbage.
Really?
And I don't know how long, but it's been a while. But they just worked out some kind of deal with the contracting company. But yeah, they finally got all the garbage out those dudes. I'm telling you, this looked like Mount Everest.
God,
it was disgusting. But I mean, that's just one problem of many.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I actually heard about that when I was in Texas, and I wasn't paying attention to much local stuff. I don't remember. I think it might have been another national story. I've Over the past 6 weeks, I've been covering the national coverage of Mississippi. It has not been good. It's welfare fraud, it's water, it's trash pickup, and most recently it was Roger Wicker calling for a no-fly zone over Ukraine.
Come to our state.
Yeah. so the press was not good, but I saw that about trash. Now, I live in Fondren.
Yeah.
I have been...
Well, how was your trash over in Fondren?
Well, I mean, I was gone, but... I don't see any signs of it in that area, so I don't know if there's another contractor. I don't know what's going on.
I meant, like, have they been picking up your garbage and everything?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it was certain parts of the city or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. So I've been kind of unaffected. Even the water stuff, I never lost water pressure. I need to get on somebody's alert. So I need to find a friend or somebody who pays attention. I should get with some of the guys here. I don't pay attention to enough local stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was drinking the water for like 2 weeks before I found out we were in a boil water.
Oh, my Lord.
At the very beginning of this thing. There's no telling what long-term consequences I have. But anyway, yeah, I mean, Jackson's not doing us any favors, but I don't know. It just seems like there needs to be some innovation. And you see people, you see governors of other states kind of coming out and really being proactive about stuff. I don't know if Tate Reeves is doing it. Maybe I don't know that this is happening, but I've never felt like Mississippi was doing anything really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mississippi is a good state that should be a great state.
Yeah, right.
I love Mississippi so much. Its people are awesome. Its culture is awesome. And I think we do have some of the most talented people in the world living here from when it comes to entertainment, education, literature, whatever. We have some athletes, of course. We have some of the most talented and brilliant people here in the state. But right now, I think a lot of policies and the government is holding the state
absolutely
back. It's the government.
I almost feel like Mississippi is almost bought into its own press to a degree, mm-hmm. kind of like we're just not a contender for, you know, so many different
things.
I
think they've settled.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, for our legislature, they get plenty of money from the feds to cover these few things they want. I mean, you know, so there's almost a perverse incentive to maintain your status quo. It almost feels like to me, and y'all know better than me, but Mississippi almost feels like somebody who gets trapped in poverty on welfare. Like, well, you know, I could go out and get trained or, you know, go through, go back to college and everything. But, you know, I'm making $55,000 a year on all of these benefits. I don't have to pay for health insurance. I've got rent subsidy. You know what I mean? It's like it's that hurdle to get out of poverty and get off of the government dole. That's difficult for a lot of people because really they almost have to take two steps backwards and pull themselves up by their bootstraps to get escape velocity from poverty. And that's kind of what Mississippi feels like. It feels like a state that's just going, well, this is what we do. We're going to nibble around the edges a little bit.
Well, the nanny state has worked.
Yeah.
It's worked. FDR's dream has come true. So, I mean, I hate to see it, but it's going to have to be a complete paradigm shift, I think, of the idea that we can be different. And of course, like I said, I think Mississippi's people are great. But like you said, I think that they themselves have been...
Yeah, well, I don't think we expect much.
Yeah, we don't expect much, but I think all of that has been because of the government. Of course, like I said, the policies themselves don't allow innovation and things of that nature, but that mindset of the nanny state, the welfare state, that has finally is brainwashed not only the country but the state itself, because like I said, I mean, imagine if all the federal dollars were cut off from Mississippi right now.
Yeah.
What would happen?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, I was thinking about this the other day. Mississippi gets in, what we provide $6 billion and the feds give us $12 billion, something like that. I think I'm in the ballpark.
Yeah.
What if the state did not, I mean, if the feds were gone and you tripled the tax rate in Mississippi, which is abhorrent to me as a libertarian, taxation is theft, but... You know, if you took a 4% rate and took it up to 12%, but no one was paying federal income taxes, I wonder if that's could Mississippi support itself? Now, I know Mississippi gets some of its budget outside of just taxing individuals, and there's property taxes and, you know, to run for local communities and all those kinds of things. But I was thinking about it the other day, and I thought, well, I mean, if we would lose 2/3 of our income to detach, and I guess this kind of comes with the idea that, you know, Some states are openly talking about secession now. But with Mississippi, we're so tied to the federal government for dollars, could we make it without it? And it seemed to me the math, I was thinking, well, I mean, I would pay a 15% state tax if you didn't have a nickel of federal income tax going into anything. And I think most people would.
Yeah.
And it seems like, is that not feasible?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, in theory, I mean, if all these little third world countries can make it.
Right.
I mean, then you would imagine that. I mean, technically, we are the United States. We are technically a state, a country, not, you know. Yeah. There's a nation state. State. The word state in America is a lot different than around the world. But, I mean, in theory, I could see it working.
But, and I think that kind of desperation, getting kicked off, if the feds fail, if the currency has a problem, I mean, that kind of desperation would be what would spur some growth in Mississippi if we had to fend for ourselves. I mean, I think like you just said, it's the nanny state. I think that in Mississippi, we are content that we're going to be taken care of by the feds. And, you know, it bugs me always a little bit when conservatives in Mississippi talk about, well, we're bailing out the bankers or we're bailing out California like that. We're getting bailed out every single year. Mississippi gets bailed out.
Mike, it's the nanny state for everything. It's not just bailouts. It's bailouts to parks and rec.
Yeah.
I remember a few months ago I was telling you that Clinton raised their restaurant tax there, and to me that's just ridiculous. Now again, I'm not a voting citizen there, so I mean, my opinion is not really worth much. However, as somebody that's living there and would like to live there one day as a former college student, to me, that number one pushes college students away from. I mean, there's probably a high restaurant sales tax in Ridgeland and Madison, those places. But to me, it looks like you'd want to keep your college kids there.
Yeah.
You're also doing this during a recession.
Right.
You're doing this in a time where restaurants and so forth are still trying to come back from COVID. To me, it was just a little bit selfish. But anyway, it's from the ballots to parks and rec, because I was at a Rotary Club meeting the other day and people were saying, oh, well, we should have a skate park. Why would the government build a skate park, a skate rink? Number one, I don't know that many people that skate in Clinton, Mississippi. It's just not a thing that most people do in the South. My girlfriend's dad was telling me, I was telling him about this whole thing, and he said that Biloxi tried to do that. They built a skate park, and nobody used it, and it become run down. They just bulldozed it over and sold the property. So they're wanting a skate park. They're wanting a splash pad.
Then build them.
I don't build them.
Yeah,
build work them. Your tail off and invest money in fundraising. Build them. I don't know. That's getting off on a whole other subject. But I was just, I finally raised the topic of, is this a proper function of government?
Right.
And nobody said anything.
Yeah. No, but I
want. I hate to sound like I'm not. I don't want to sound like I'm bragging. I don't know if bragging would be even the right word. But I was the youngest person in there. I'm 23 years old, and everybody else is in there. Probably the youngest person in there was probably in their 30s, early 30s, and I'm just sitting there asking the real question.
Right.
I don't know. That's a whole other subject, though.
Well, you're right. I mean, it's infested everything, and local taxes are some of the most nefarious to me, because what they always get away with is it's just 1 cent. It's just 1 penny. We're just raising the tax 1% on hotel stays, you know, but they've done that 7 times. So now, you know, I've just stayed in hotels. When I was staying in Dallas, I think my hotel room itself for an extended stay hotel was maybe $380 or $90 a week for the room, but the tab was $515 because I had over $100 in taxes on this room.
Well, look the guy that was presenting all this stuff the other day, and I'm won't say his name, but when I said all that, he was like, "Now wait a minute! The government didn't raise this tax; the people of Clinton did."
Right.
And I was thinking in my mind, I didn't say it. I wish I would have said it, but this dude used his elected platform to advocate for the tax.
Right? Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, that's how they always have to sell it. It's just 1 penny.
Yeah,
they do this all the time. It's just 1%, and here's all the great things.
It's just one arm. It's just one arm and a leg, Mike.
You get people to believe that you will get something that you want, and it's barely going to cost you anything. But, mm-hmm. but they, what they leave out is, so we're going to, something you want, we're going to rob everybody. You know, and
yeah,
it's very
that's what,
funny.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know the percentage of people that voted yes on that tax, but not everybody wanted to pay for a splash pad.
Right.
I don't want to pay for no nasty splash pad that the government's going to take care of for some kid
get
in a
enjoy that
for some
pad.
Kid in a wet diaper to walk around in. Shit, to me, that's just it's a poor use of tax dollars.
Yeah. Well, this happens over and over again, but I don't know. We'll see. Mississippi we need a swift kick in the butt or something. We need somebody exciting to come in. I'm doing a little bit of.
You know, advocating
Elon
for,
Musk is in the news and just,
yeah, why didn't he come to Mississippi?
Yeah,
I mean, which technically they kind of are. They had that thing on the coast. They used some old oil rigs right off the Mississippi Gulf Coast for SpaceX stuff. So technically, right. He is in Mississippi. Oh, now I wish he moved Twitter here.
So the so we're getting the investment has gone from the federal, you know, from the taxpayer to the federal government to Elon Musk to come back into Mississippi because
yeah.
he gets a lot of taxpayer cash. This is my hesitation falling all over Elon Musk because he gets a lot of tax dollars. But anyway, all right, we're talking to Stone Clanton, Americans Prosperity. We'll find out what they're up to coming up.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open.
All right, we are back. We're talking to Stone Clanton here with Americans for Prosperity. So tell us a little bit about what you got going on these days.
Yeah, so we actually just had a really good healthcare forum this past Tuesday evening over at the Sheraton. Over in Flowood, I don't know if you've been there or not, but that is
that's the swanky place, isn't it?
Right over there near, in between Flowood and the airport.
Yeah,
on that road, whatever.
Yeah,
it is a fine hotel over there.
Yeah,
they got a golf course over there, fine pool. They even got a lazy river and a hot tub and all
really?
That stuff. Yeah, good little rooftop bar type thing, and then downstairs a good event center. I think it's kind of taken over the place of the Westin in Jackson for big events. But yeah, we had a good little one, a little forum over there. Had some healthcare people from Nationals down, one from DC, one from Florida, and then another direct primary care guy from Florida, Dr. Lee Gross, who was just amazing, talking about the benefits, which we have direct primary care in the state, but he's been very successful with it. And of course we were mainly talking about CON and the devil that it is.
Certificate of need.
Yeah, certificate of need, CON. Had that going on. I had some legislators there, some legislative candidates were there, as well as some coalition partners. We partnered with Mississippi Center for Public Policy on that. And then so that was really successful. I'm happy, and we're hopefully going to be doing that all across the state soon, some small forums like that, so some legislators can come together.
If I could make a suggestion to AFP, if you want to see some growth and some choice, some options in more affordable and pragmatic health care, Mississippi needs to end its prohibition on naturopaths here.
Naturopaths.
You cannot be a doctor of natural medicine here. Now, I don't know exactly what the certification is. They do not go through the same training as an MD, but you can go to Louisiana. You can go to, in Arkansas, you can go to a naturopath. And a naturopath.
Now, the ODs do that, stuff like that?
They do, a lot of them are like that, but there is a designation where, you know, an OD is typically going to be like a chiropractor, or a DO is typically going to be
more physical.
A chiropractor. Mm-hmm. But they do a lot of chiropractors, a lot of them are very in tune with nutrition and stuff too.
Gotcha.
Naturopaths are really primarily about nutrition and natural treating and maintaining health, as opposed to constantly just battling symptoms, which our medical system makes a ton of money off of. But the bottom line is, even if people don't want it, Mississippi is restrictive in that area. You can, you know, when I first started kind of studying natural health stuff, which I do extensively and talk about it every Wednesday, I wanted to get my kids to a naturopath, and that was the first time I realized, oh, they don't allow them in Mississippi. I had to go to Louisiana. I think Arkansas does allow them. I'm not sure about Alabama and Tennessee, but it's just another one of these things where, you know, the medical board in this state has kept out people from competing. And I believe in this age of COVID and people's hesitation with a lot of the medical community these days, not to mention the cost of what medicine is doing to people, which is, you know, regulations add to a lot of that. I think people want more options in, you know, who they can see as a doctor, and we've shut out naturopaths.
Yeah, I don't see. I'll have to look more into that. I don't see where America's prosperity would be against something like that. So yeah. I think that would be something interesting to look at. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, growing up here.
Yeah.
I don't know if they don't allow it, but yeah, I knew they had the MDs and ODs, but yeah, naturopaths. So I have to look into that.
Yeah, get that done for me, Stone.
I will.
I appreciate that. All right, we got to take a quick break. We went a little long last time, but we'll come back and start figuring out. I know you've got a function coming up. We want to talk about that and other ways that people can get involved with American's prosperity. So everybody stick around. We will be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking to Stone Clanton with Americans for Prosperity. I was asking you during the break, I know AFP, you know, you've got a national organization, you're not just statewide. Is there a feeling around the Americans for Prosperity and national group, how the midterms are going to play out? Are we seeing a red wave now?
I feel feeling very much more so optimistic than we were just in the past few weeks, I think.
Yeah, that never made sense to me how the Democrats could retain power, because they're not impressive. But, you know, like we were talking during the break, the Fetterman thing to me was like just like a microcosm. It was kind of like, how can you stick with these people at this point?
He did have a suit on, though.
Did he? I didn't even notice. Yeah, I was so distracted by the mumble thing that was coming out of his mouth. Yeah, that was pretty pathetic, but predict it. The bad thing is I didn't put my money where my mouth is. You know, the Republicans, you could have bet, I think, like 32 cents to earn a dollar for the Republicans taking over the Senate like 3 or 4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It was down that low. Now they're at 69 cents, yeah. So the bet is not very good, and Democrats are way down. But, this should be interesting.
Yeah, I think we're feeling a lot more optimistic, like I said, especially in the past few weeks. You know, If worse comes to worse, I think we might see a runoff or two, but we'll be ready to AFP Action will be ready to go if that's the case. But other than that, I think we're going to see some conservatives take back the House and Senate.
You know, I really wish politics has invaded so much of our lives, and you know the thing that's so sick is that as soon as the midterms are over, we launch immediately now into the presidential race for 2024. Mm-hmm. It's too much. It's just too much. We need, I don't know, we're a big country.
We need
a policy
simulation for a minute.
Yeah, seriously. Like 6 months. I mean, is 6 months not enough for a candidate for the presidency to get out their message and make the, and particularly when most candidates are well known anyway, this idea of constant politicking and getting on sides and getting behind somebody and the jockeying and stuff, it's mm-hmm. exhausting to mm-hmm. me. I mean, and I'm somebody, I'm supposed to care about it because this is part of my job. I'm sickened by
it's tough.
Too much.
Well, you get drained on it.
Yeah.
And it is tough.
Same garbage over and over again.
Yeah.
I mean, for years.
The point is, those people should not have that much control over your life.
Amen.
Because
exactly.
That much, you know, that much stress, it's not fair.
Right.
It's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not the way it was meant to be.
Elections should not be this important to our daily lives. Mm-hmm. Now, you might, on the world stage, I think a president should be a very important figure. You want a statesman. You want somebody who's going to represent your country well. But this idea of who we elect, oh, my God, that's going to determine how much money I get to take home. And, you know, I mean, just they're in every nook and cranny of our life, so it does actually become very important, and it should not be that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, y'all got a function coming up. Y'all are kind of, I guess you're winding up this year, getting ready for the legislative session.
Oh, yeah, we sure do. We got an event coming up this Saturday at 6 p.m. at our Ridgeland office at 795 Woodlands Parkway, Ridgeland, Mississippi. It's just going to be a fall social. It's called Fall for Freedom.
Yeah.
We're going to have some hot apple cider, alcoholic, non-alcoholic, have some stews, chili, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Pecan pie, all the spice desserts, and just do some socializing, networking. We'll have activist volunteers, coalition partners, hopefully some elected officials and anybody else who wants to come. Just a good time to just take a break, take a minute away from everything that's going on around us and just kind of have a little fun.
Yeah, it's a great group of people. Everything I've ever been to at America's Prosperity, I always meet somebody new that I didn't know before that's always very interesting. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You get around like-minded people, but they're not – it's not a –
I mean, it's not the rebel meetings that I want, you know, where we're plotting the overthrow of the government or anything. It's just people who understand, you know, government's not the solution to our problems. They are the problem and ways to get them out. But I've always met fantastic people at your party.
Yeah, so, no, we'd love for everybody to come out. It's very much open to the public, 6 p.m. at 795 Woodlands Parkway, Ridgeland, Mississippi, this Saturday. But yeah, you did miss a good one about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
our Becoming a Watchdog, that we had a really good crowd there. We had about 17 people there at the classroom.
Oh, that's interesting.
And
yeah.
We're talking about how to spot government corruption and what to do when you see it. We had a little message from the state auditor.
Open your eyes.
So it was very good. But after that, we're going to be kind of winding on down. We'll have a few things. We'll probably have one more Torchbearer meeting next month. And then we'll have our Holly Jolly policy party on December 3rd.
Yeah. And then it's off to work.
Oh,
the legislature cranks up again. Right?
Yeah. Well, I think we might take a little breather time before we hit the legislative session. But
yeah, because next year you've got not only legislative session, but then you got elections that year. And so y'all, you know, candidates can come to you guys and kind of make their case, and AFP gets involved with them or can help them even with policy stuff too. So next year's, I guess, a pretty big year for you.
It will be, of course, you know, session. I think it can go one way or the other because it's election year. So they might, they're either going to not do anything or they're going to do everything to try to please everybody, even if it's really technically minute things, but it might still be a lot of money they're spending.
Getting things done for you. That's what they want to say.
Maybe a lot of spending money, but hopefully we don't see anything with Medicaid expansion or anything. I don't think it'll go anywhere if it does, but we're still, you know, we're going to fight that if it comes up, especially with the recent overturning of Roe v. Wade. There's going to be a case from people supposedly on the right that we're supposed to, you know, take care of mothers and children and extend the postpartum Medicaid. And
that sounds like a very noble idea. Delbert Hoseman ought to start really supporting some charities and really going out there and helping them, because there's plenty of ways to support.
There is
any
plenty
kind
of ways.
At any point.
Tax credits available at all these different little crisis pregnancy centers.
Yeah,
good stuff. But I mean, if that comes up, we're definitely going to fight it. And like I said, of course, certificate of need. Of course, trying to expand educational freedom at the foundational level, and then hopefully. Trying to prevent any unneeded regulations against home-based businesses.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like you said, election year. So.
And naturopaths. Now you have that.
Yeah, naturopaths. Naturopaths. I'll keep that in mind.
All right. Quick, one more break. We'll be right back with Stone Plant and Americans Prosperity. Stick around.
This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will it catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment here. We're talking to Stone Clanton, Americans for Prosperity. What's the rest of the team up to these days? Are y'all still crisscrossing the state with all of your activities?
We have been crisscrossing the state. I'm staying mostly over in the Jackson area and then over in Meridian. But yeah, Cade, of course, is deputy state director now, taking over a lot of our lobbying issues, as well as sort of still coalition director of the team. And of course, Starla is out there making the case for AFP to everybody, from legislators to business leaders to whatever. And I think we've got a really good team right now. We're growing. We got the guy up in North Mississippi now, Nathan Moore, and we're looking for somebody right now anywhere in South Mississippi, even if it's over in Southwest, but you know, down to Hattiesburg, the coast, that kind of stuff. So we're growing and doing a good job.
What an interesting mayor down in the Gulfport or Biloxi that was
Fofo. I can't remember his last name. He's an interesting mayor in Biloxi. They call him Fofo. That's his nickname.
Oh,
he's a
kind of a freedom guy, wasn't he? If the one I'm talking about, I don't know if you're talking.
Oh, you're
one.
Talking about Ocean Springs.
Yeah,
you're talking about.
Yes, I think so.
Shay Dobson.
Yeah,
that's who you're talking about. Yeah, Ocean Springs. Yeah, he was a Liberty guy. He stayed one term. And I think he went off to do something different.
Yeah.
He just decided not to run for a second term.
Yeah.
Ocean Springs is a pretty little town. We're getting out there doing a lot of different stuff. So hopefully we'll get somebody on the coast. We're pushing that pretty hard now. expanding the team, like I said, even with some interns and stuff in the upcoming session, so they can get a little bit of experience, maybe a legal intern or something. But yeah, getting ready for that event on Saturday. Like I said, that's Saturday at 6 p.m., 795 Ridgeland, I mean Woodlands Parkway, Ridgeland, Mississippi. That's Fall for Freedom, our fall social. Come on out and have a good time. You can find us on Facebook. You can find me at 601-300-9536. And S. Clanton at AFPHQ.org. And we'd love to have y'all.
Your Facebook is the main place everybody can find your stuff.
American yes, Supply, Facebook.
AFP Mississippi.
AFP Mississippi. And then on Instagram, AFP Mississippi. That just launched. And hopefully we'll get some more social media out. Of course, you can find us on Twitter, too, at AFP Mississippi. We're even delving into TikTok soon.
I was just about to ask if you're doing the TikTok. I talked about it yesterday. Have you seen these YouTube short things that they're doing now?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what almost everybody does now. They're trying to beat TikTok.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, they're pretty bad. I hate it. I go to YouTube for videos.
Yeah, I go for mostly financial stuff, or if I got to do a repair around the house, YouTube is just fantastic. There's so many great things about
YouTube.
Yeah, I do too.
You can learn a lot on there.
You can learn a lot on YouTube. The censorship disgusts me like everybody else. Google is horrific with their censorship. Tons of things I've posed with Google, but YouTube is fantastic. But these YouTube shorts... I didn't really know what they were, and so I clicked on one the other day. It was this – one of them was this very attractive girl, and she basically does – she's not a very good dancer, but she dances for like 8 seconds. And there were like 21,000 upvotes on this thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden it immediately feeds me something else. And I did sit there – I will admit – I sat there and watched it for probably 5 to 10 minutes trying to figure out.
Well, however many times you view that, that's that many more views. At least that's how TikTok works.
Yeah. But
so, like, if you
there
if
was
you
no
sit
value
there,
to any of it.
Yeah, yeah. The shorter, the better for their views. That's how it works. Because it just plays and plays and plays.
Right.
But, yeah.
Ugh,
yeah. There's,
it was horrible.
YouTube's trying to get in the TikTok game. But we're going to also do that. And there is some ways to actually do it correctly. If you look at people like Hannah Cox with the Foundation for Economic Education, some other places, they do it well.
Well, I don't mind something short and succinct. Now, I got to fill up 2 hours, so I'm the last thing I'd be accused of is being succinct. But you can put a great message into a minute or 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. No fluff. You don't have to do anything. You just get right to the point and you do it. But so much of the stuff like I saw on that YouTube stuff or stuff that I see on TikTok is like – It's content free, and I believe it is destroying our attention span. And I was talking about this, railing about this the other day. I know I sound like an old man, but you get these kids scrolling through TikTok and these short YouTube videos, and they're watching 11-second clips, and then you tell them to turn off their phone and then sit in a school seat for 8 hours listening to, you know, about 4 teachers drone on for an hour each. I mean, how do we expect kids, you know what I mean? And then when they fidget around their seats and they can't focus on the teacher for an hour, they get in trouble and then they get medicated. They get diagnosed with ADHD.
You're on to something.
We're destroying the American attention span. We are absolutely destroying it.
Well, it's the Chinese government.
Yeah, that's what they say, TikToks, but... YouTube's joining right in, and doing it.
Yeah,
but you know there've always been these things. There was a movement a little while ago. Some big of the entertainment companies were moving towards. They were going to start doing series like comedy series, sitcoms, or something like that. That were, I can't remember, 7 minutes long. I can't remember who tried to do this.
Wow.
If it was Apple, I mean, it was a big player in the thing. They said, "We believe there's a market for." These really, really short
I'm sure there is.
Serials.
I'm sure there is.
Oh, golly. If you cannot focus on a...
Show that for an hour long.
Yeah,
or
a sitcom is 22 minutes and 30 seconds. That's how much content is in a Seinfeld episode.
Uh-huh.
If you can't sit there for 22 minutes and get absorbed in a story and then move on, we've got big problems. I mean, this may be why we never tackle another real problem for their history, because it takes a little time and effort. You know, that's what you guys do. You spend years and years and years focusing in on something and following it through. This trend is not our friend, I would say. But I rail against social media anyway. What do you think about Elon Musk taking over Twitter? You think that's a good
thing?
Do I think
it's good for Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you said earlier, I mean, and I agree, I think I'm leery of anybody like that, Jeff Bezos or whoever, you know, but I think Elon's onto something because he's built different.
Yeah.
You know, he's something about him is different.
Yeah.
And he,
well, we were talking about it. We think he's autistic for sure. I mean, there's something, but that's sometimes he's just the biggest geniuses. You know?
Just, and I mean, I think he is definitely more open to free speech.
Yeah.
You know,
well, the words are there, but I am like somebody who's been cheated on. Mm-hmm. You know, I've fallen for so many people with their words over the years, and then I look in retrospect at their action. I'm like, good Lord, well, I can't believe they got me again. So I'm open to him being better. I do love the fact that the people at Twitter are squirming right now.
Yeah.
They are really squirming for their jobs. Yeah. They're begging for their jobs. They're demanding.
I'm wondering how many people's going to be fired.
Yeah, he said 75%. He said 75% of that staff. And I can't believe it takes whatever the, you know, thousands and thousands of people it takes to run a message board, which is essentially what it is.
He's going
to
get everybody from Parler and all the failed social media platforms to come on.
If he fires 75% of the Twitter staff, there is going to be a glut of those kinds of workers. He will be able to pick and choose at a significantly reduced rate. So, you know, I do like that. But social media, it's overall destructive as far as I'm concerned. All right, we only got a few seconds left. Tell us one more time, Saturday night, 6 o'clock.
Yep, Fall for Freedom, Saturday night, 6 o'clock, 795 Woodlands Parkway, Ridgeland, Mississippi. We'd love to have y'all. Good time for socializing and networking and just talking
meeting
about freedom.
Some new folks. Yeah. All right. And you're also up there on AFP Mississippi on Facebook. And then your contact information one more time.
601-300-9536 and sclanton@afphq.org.
All right. Good deal. Well, I appreciate you coming in. Sorry we took a few weeks off there, but I'm glad to have you all back.
Yep.
All right. That's John Clanton, Americans for Prosperity. I'll see everybody else tomorrow.
No matter
bye-bye.
How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter.